Good Friday afternoon to you. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today's Juno afternoon on what's turning into a beautiful afternoon here in Juno. And today we're going to talk with artists Byron Birdsall and Courtney Birdsall. They're going to be talking about their first Friday show happening at Annie Kale's. First Friday happening all around at all the galleries downtown. We'll also get an update from the Treadwell Ice Arena with Lauren Anderson. Going to be talking to Jump Society folks. Lou Logan's coming from Alaska Robotics to talk about the next Jump Society show. And the Juno Museum Juno Explorers program we're going to be talking about as well. That's all happening. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, all that and more coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Virginia U.S. lawmakers are redoubling their efforts to attain federal recognition for six Virginia tribes. As Matt Laszlo reports, they're more optimistic now that the federal government has granted recognition to the Pamunkey tribe.
More than 400 years ago, European settlers were greeted by Virginia tribes. Yet six of the seven don't meet the federal government standard for recognition. That's partly because in the early 1900s, Walter Plecker destroyed the records. He only believed in two races, black and white. Thus, the tribes didn't fit into his worldview. Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner says his state has a shameful record when it comes to the tribes.
For a long time, the Native American tribes in Virginia have really been discriminated against.
In July, the Bureau of Indian Affairs finally granted the Pamunkey tribe federal recognition, which now has the other Virginia tribes wondering if they should change their tactic.
But there was real concern that the federal recognition process would take forever, and that's why six of the tribes decided to go the legislative route. The remarkable thing is the Pamunkeys got through on the administrative proposal, and the other six tribes have still been waiting for legislative approval.
That legislative proposal needs to come from Congress, and it's hard to get floor time for the bill, with lawmakers fighting over things like the Iran nuclear deal or funding for Planned Parenthood. Virginia Democratic Congressman Bobby Scott says the recognition of the Pamunkey highlights a sad truth.
Well, I think it shows the other tribes should have been recognized a long time ago.
But getting the six other tribes recognized won't be as easy as one might think. Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine says a part of the reason is that the other tribes don't have their own reservation lands, which makes their struggle that much harder.
Because they don't have the reservation land, the thing that made the Pamunkey easier for the purposes of meeting the BIA criteria is they got a reservation grant from the Crown of England, and they can prove unbroken chain of title since the 1670s, and the other guys don't.
Kaine says that makes the administrative route through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, or BIA, nearly impossible for the other tribes.
The word that we still get from the BIA is that it would be extremely difficult for the other tribes to get through the BIA.
But Kaine is still optimistic. While riding the subway in the Capitol, the senator explained that the Virginia tribes have a better chance of getting Congress to recognize them.
Ours are less controversial than some because our tribes have forsworn gambling. You know, they basically have said, we will not claim any sovereign right to gambling, and any gambling, we will agree to be bound by state law on gambling. Well, some of the other tribes haven't said that, you know, from the other states. So maybe there's a way to move ours separately. Maybe there's a way to move a bunch of them together because then you get more states interested.
Virginia Democratic Congressman Jerry Connolly and the rest of the state's congressional delegation say the six remaining tribes deserve swift congressional action.
There's a long and sorry history with how Native American tribal communities have been treated, especially in Virginia. And that sorry history has been linked to our racial past. And so we want to make sure justice ultimately is provided to long-suffering communities of really our first citizens.
The other problem facing the tribes is that this fall's schedule is already jam-packed, and next year is a presidential election, so Congress isn't expected to be too productive. That has Virginia lawmakers and tribal leaders calling for action without many options to force action on the issue. Reporting from the Capitol, I'm Matt Laszlo.
The International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples is recognized annually in August. Events at the United Nations in New York are scheduled for Monday, which includes speakers, a video, and the launch of a health publication. This year's focus is on health and wellness. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Supported by the American Indian Tourism Conference 2015, providing technical resources and education to advance and develop tourism programs in Indian Country. Early registration ends August 24th at AITC2015.com. Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at UTTC.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to the KTO studios, where we are excited to have with us in the studio right now Byron Birdsall and Courtney Birdsall. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate
it so much. And, of course, Byron, you're sort of a fairly legendary Alaskan artist, and I'm sure there's so many people listening right now that have seen your work, have it hanging on their wall, or have admired it for many years. And, Courtney, you are as well are an artist, and you've gotten together to do a father-daughter art show happening at Annie Kale's, and the first Friday showing of that is tonight. So that's an exciting thing.
Yeah,
have you done
this afternoon.
That kind of thing before?
Yes, we had a father-daughter show when Courtney was about, yeah.
A few years back.
You can't see this on the radio.
Mostly crayons were the medium you were working in at that time.
Yes, I've evolved into watercolors now.
Have you? So, tell me, I'll start with you, Courtney. Tell me a little bit, I mean, obviously, growing up with an artist, a well-known artist in the household, do you feel that your artwork, this is maybe a dumb question, but has your artwork been influenced by his artwork? Do you feel like you've gone in a certain direction, or do you feel like you've maybe pushed away from that influence somewhat as you've developed as an artist?
Well, he did give me an early start, and I definitely followed kind of his approaches to going at it, but I'm starting to evolve into my own style.
I would think that that's something, you know, just like anyone whose parents are well known for something and you follow somewhat in that field, having your own voice is such an important part of what it is to be an artist.
Mm-hmm. And just to get into the act here, when Courtney was old enough to hold down a job, she went out and got a job in Anchorage as a cashier, and she worked one day. And she came home and said, "I don't want to do this. I want to paint pictures." And I said, "Yeah, sure." But she was right, and she's been doing it ever since. And I taught her the basics, and she got a lot of help from her mother, who was also an artist. And Courtney shows that influence, but she does her own thing.
Are you both, and it sounds like we were talking a little bit before we got on the microphone here about kind of the common themes that are happening in this show. So it seems like you're also inspired by the landscape of Alaska as well. I mean, so many people here are, and it's hard to not be inspired by the landscape of Alaska. So is that what you concentrate on, or are there other things that you...
Yeah, pretty much the landscapes. I mean, I paint primarily for Skagway, and so there's a good flood of cruise shippers coming in, and they're also in awe of our landscape, so... I tried to paint something for them. I've started doing a lot of birds lately. There's a hummingbird festival in Ketchikan every year that kind of kick-starts my season, and I have an assignment to paint a new bird every year. So that's led me to move into birds quite a bit.
Oh, that's interesting. And then you were saying that you're kind of in a bit of a flowers stage right now.
Yeah, I think I've gone on to something else, but this show has.
I see.
I think I have 10 new pieces, and 5 of them are. Our flowers.
When you say you've gone on to something else, is it calculated?
Oh, no.
Or is it just flows into something else, and then that starts inspiring you?
Each painting leads into the next, and as I'm ending with one picture, I'm thinking about the next one, and it's not a revolution, it's an evolution. And you just keep your ears open and listen to the muse, and sometimes it amuses, and sometimes it leads.
And is that how you work as well, one painting at a time, or are you sometimes working on two paintings?
No, never
do.
No, one at a time.
And tell me a little bit about your – is there a way that you might describe the things that have influenced you in your career as you kind of think back earlier career and
yes.
do you think of your work in different phases?
Early on, when I was finding my way before I found a style, doing lots of world traveling, I studied the art of India. We spent some time in India. And then my biggest influence has been when we got to Japan and saw the block printers, the Japanese block, Hokusai and Hiroshige, and just blew me away. And so I tried doing that with the woodblock printing, and it just didn't work for me. And I said, heck, I can do this with a brush. So a lot of my work has graded washes, which are washes of paint that go from light to dark or from one color to another. And those are largely the influence of the Japanese woodblock printers.
Do you think there's a residual influence from the Indian work you saw as well?
Not quite so much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of their work as having a real precision
yes.
to it, and I think of your work in that way as
yes,
well.
Yes, and I'm the older I get, the more detailed I'm getting, and it's driving me nuts, but I can't help it. And so there's some of that very much so in my work now.
And how would you describe your style, if you were to describe it, or some of your influences?
Well, one other way I've always described his is he played a lot with light, and light has always been a pretty strong part of all of his paintings, whereas I'm kind of interested in the colors and textures of nature, kind of all the, when you're looking out at a mountainside, you see a lot of texture in there and all the different shades. And so recently, that's kind of been what I've been looking at.
How does that affect your technique or the tools that you use to create your painting,
yeah,
if that's what you're trying to do?
Well, I'll experiment with different ways to get texture. And
is it pretty much all with paintbrush and that sort of thing, or are you actually...
No, you can add, as many people probably know, adding a little salt to your watercolor will give it a little texture, or just playing with different materials to blot it and see what works.
And so watercolors, that's your is that
same.
That same with you? And how did is that part of the Japanese influence as well?
No, I started doing watercolors because we were traveling so much, and watercolors are portable.
Yeah, that's right.
But I do oils as well. I'm working on a big scale. I did a series for a company in Anchorage where they were huge oils. I did about a dozen. Or 10 by 14.
Well, that must be, because working in oils is a completely other thing,
yeah.
Right? So
it's a very forgiving medium, because if you screw up, you can keep painting. But watercolor is not quite so forgiving.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, my understanding is oils, I mean, it takes, I mean, hours and hours for it to set and cure and really, really be done, right?
So there's ways to defeat that.
No. Oh, okay.
There's dryers that you can add to your oil paints that they'll dry overnight.
Oh,
so
I
you
see.
Can put glazing on top.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about this show in particular, and what is it that interests you about doing a show that's a father-daughter?
Well, we've been talking about this for the longest time. Courtney and Trevor have lived in Skagway for 8 years, and we've been talking about it for close on to 8 years. And I had my first show at Annie Kale's when they were in a different location, 1970s.
Uh-huh.
And so so I've been showing at Annie Kale's. I did every year for a lot of years. And I'm trying to slow down a little bit now. But it's been a while since we've been at Annie Kale's. And so this was a good excuse for both of us to have a show here. And I'm also, both of us have just come out with books. And I've written done a book of black and whites of historical Alaska, and Courtney's done a whole book devoted to growing a carrot.
Skagway's first locally published children's book.
That's
and
nice.
Give the author credit.
And Emily Willis, a friend of mine, came to me with a story that she started telling her son. And over the last couple of years, we put it together and came out with a book.
Oh, that's fun. And is it selling? Is it selling in town here?
Yes. It'll be available tonight.
Okay.
We'll be there to sign our books.
Great.
And I'm not exactly sure where else in town it'll be available yet.
But. And now the black and whites you're working on, are those watercolor as well?
No, they're pen and ink.
Oh, okay.
And I was in Prague a few years back and saw this guy doing some pen and inks on the St. Charles Bridge. And I was very impressed. So I bought one and studied it. And learned just by looking at it and thought I'd try some. And one thing led to another, and there's probably 100 in this book.
Wow. So your world travels have certainly not ended.
Oh, no.
You're still a traveler.
No. Oh, yeah.
And do you find an influence in most trips that you go on, or is it unusual to find an influence that really affects your work?
We just got back last month from Istanbul, where I've always had a passionate sideline is Russian icons. And I've always wanted to go to Istanbul, or if you prefer, which I do,
Constantinople,
and studied there. And so you're always learning and traveling. You see things and you add that to your bank of knowledge and skills.
And when you say study there, did you go there specifically to study? Or you just went and drew it in and went to see Hagia Sophia and the Blue Mosque and the amazing things. Yeah, right.
If you could see it for the people.
Yeah, that's right. Amazing. Well, I have one other question for you, which is that is it a little intimidating to show next to your dad's work, a celebrated great artist?
I have to say, this being our first show with landscapes side by side, it actually put a little pressure on me, but I spent more time, and I think my pieces turned out better. And so it was kind of a good learning experience to just push me a little further, which he got me started, and he keeps inspiring me.
And,
to this day.
Yeah. And if
well
you,
said, Corey.
Well said. If you were to describe your father's work and just if someone had never seen your father's work and you were trying to describe it to them, how would you describe his work?
Well, I guess I always see the light in it still, because that's what the one thing I still aspire to capture is how he can capture how light affects everything we see, which he's mastered over the years.
And then I'll ask you the same question. What do you see in your daughter's work when someone were to say, what's her art like? How would
she
you describe
does
it?
Not imitate me. She uses some of my techniques, which have they're not my techniques, like throwing salt on a picture or creating textures with blotted up toilet paper. And there's all kinds of ways. But Courtney has, I think, an extra streak of creativity that I'm very literal and photographic when I look at things. And what I see is what I get. But Courtney can reach beyond that and pull in a little more imagination than I have. And she might have got that from her mother. I'll give her that. But
well, it was a pleasure talking to both of you. The show is tonight at Annie Kale's. It's for First Friday, so it starts in just a few minutes at 4:30. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you'll both be there with both of your books. What's the name of your book?
Byron Birdsall's Alaska.
Oh, okay.
How's that for a creative title?
Very literal, again, as you said. And then yours
is? And Atlin Blue and Miss Scarlet.
Okay, very good. Well, it's a pleasure meeting both of you. Thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for being in Juneau, and have a great First Friday over at Annie Kale's.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Right now, here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
This is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 7th of August, 2015. It's the birthday of anthropologist-archaeologist Louis Leakey, born in Kabete, Kenya, 1903. Parents were Anglican missionaries. He studied anthropology at a time when most anthropologists believed that human beings had originated in Asia. But Leakey had read Charles Darwin's theory that human beings might have originated in Africa, and he moved back to Africa to try to prove Darwin right. And in 1959, turned up a hominid skull, which was almost 2 million years old, the oldest skull of a close human relative ever found at that point. It's the birthday of the Dutch dancer Mata Hari, born Margaretha Zelle in Leeuwarden in the Netherlands in 1876. She danced professionally in Paris. She occasionally worked in a brothel. She apparently sold some information about France to the Germans in 1916, then later made a deal with the head of French intelligence to spy on the Germans. She was charged with espionage, convicted, executed by firing squad in 1917, though one of her prosecutors later said there wasn't enough evidence against her to flog a cat. It's the birthday of Jane Kramer, 1938, Providence, Rhode Island, wrote for the Village Voice, and then became a staff writer for the New Yorker magazine in 1964, covering European politics, became the magazine's European correspondent. It's the birthday of the essayist and journalist Anne Fadiman, born New York City, 1953, best known as the author of The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down, about the culture clash between a Hmong family whose daughter has epilepsy and American doctors. Also wrote a best-selling essay collection, Ex Libris, Confessions of a Common Reader. Her mother was a war correspondent in China, Anna Lee Jacoby. Her father, Clifton Fadiman, was a book reviewer and a radio host. And it was on this day in 1947, Thor Heyerdahl's raft Kon-Tiki crashed into a reef in French Polynesia. He was a Norwegian ethnologist who had set out from Peru the April before to try to prove that early South Americans could have traveled across the Pacific and settled in the Polynesian islands. And so he built a raft out of balsa logs lashed together with hemp ropes and a cabin made of bamboo with a roof of banana leaves. Here's a poem for today by Brad Lighthouser, Midsummer, Midwest. We played a game called Four Square with a lemon-yellow ball in the street after dinner. We kept awaiting a call from somebody's parent ordering us in, but amazingly no call came. The still bright ball went round, we went on with our game, voices no doubt lifting to where the Dawkins's grandmother lay, winded by emphysema, who hadn't been out all day and had now minutely to ponder how this evening's sunset would fall on the plaster homeland of hummocks and craters of the guest room wall. Midsummer Midwest by Brad Lighthouser, from his collection The Oldest Word for Dawn, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering the weekly poetry podcast Poetry Off the Shelf, featuring contemporary American poets, readings, reviews, and more. Subscriptions at poetryfoundation.org/poetrypodcast. And by LegalZoom, providing legal help to Americans with online services, customer support, and independent legal advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
For this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is scheduled to reopen on Monday, August 10th, and will be hosting Rocky Mountain Hockey School in August and Kim Muir's Power Skating Hockey Clinic in September. More information at juno.org/parkrec/ice rink.
skating. Skating is starting up again. Treadwell Arena, as you just heard in that PSA, is opening again, and Lauren Anderson is here with me to talk about it. Lauren, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And sounds like, yeah, so you have the whole process of laying the ice down, and that's going on now, kind of?
It is.
Okay.
We started on Sunday, and it takes us about 5 to 7 days. It's a long process, and we're just kind of slow and steady, putting layer by layer of ice down, and we use a hand sprayer until we have enough ice where we can drive the Zamboni. But it takes some time because of the paint and the process of getting all those layers down, because we don't want the studded tires that are required on the Zamboni to then kind of chew up all that hard work that we've done.
I know last time you were on and we were talking, I talked to you about this for like 15 minutes because it's so interesting to me. But it's so fascinating to me that you don't just flood this thing, turn on the coils, right, and it just freezes up. Like, that there's this long process and very diligent, and then I hadn't really thought about it, but all the lines and stuff that are marked for hockey and that stuff, that's all way down in there and multiple layers down in the ice, right?
It's true, and we hand paint it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so
it's
actually
paint.
It is. It's more like a calcium chalk that's colored, and we have to paint the ice white also. So, but that's not hand painted.
Okay.
We have a hopper.
Okay.
It's called the Mark IV, and we pull that around and around this hopper.
Bring out the Mark IV.
It's true. And then once we have enough layers on top of the white paint, then we'll start painting the lines. We did that on Tuesday and had volunteers from the community, part of the skating community, come and help, and a couple of Parks and Rec employees come and help so that we could get it all done. And then we always add our kind of own Treadwell flair and do something special in our center circle.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
so,
of course. Yeah.
So that'll be worth coming out to check out.
Cool.
Our center line we fancied up this year.
You kind of switch it up every year
a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
And it can be bad luck if you don't change up your center line every year.
Oh.
So we do something new every year.
That's a little bit of skating superstition
I had no idea
about.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I like hearing about that kind of stuff. This is the inside scoop. I love it. And so where are you at the process? Is the Zamboni running now yet, or you're still in the hand spraying process part of it?
Yes, but right now, just starting right before I got here. Yeah, we're doing the Zamboni is up on the ice, and that really helps the process because that does all the work instead of us walking backwards miles and miles and miles.
When you're laying it down and spraying it on, are you then having to kind of hand squeegee it and do that leveling stuff?
It just
lays out there.
It's a sprayer, and so that's what's so great about it, is it just freezes.
And
the building's very cold right now, colder than it is during the season, because we want the slab, that cement, and that to be cold enough so that it's chilling everything layer by layer.
Is the water treated in some way to make sure it gets colder or things like that? Or
we
harder?
Use cold water.
Yeah.
We just don't put any hot water on.
Okay.
And no, Juno water.
Yeah.
It makes amazing ice. And
makes great beer.
Yeah.
I just
very versatile. And
in.
Pizza. Yeah.
Great pizza. Great for pizza crust. Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about now. Okay, the ice is getting laid down. It's going to be done. And you guys are going to be open Monday?
Monday we open, and Rocky Mountain Hockey School is coming up from Colorado and to help us kick off the season. And they've been coming 8 or 9 years now, and it's a youth hockey camp, and it's for skaters that already know how to skate, and most of them are part of the youth hockey group called JDIA, but it's open to anyone. If you lived in Anchorage, you can come down, and I'm not actually sure who has signed up yet, but you can still sign up on Monday morning. The 7 to 12-year-olds start at 9 a.m., and then at 10:15 are the 13 and over.
Okay.
13 to 18.
So even if you're a novice or if you're really well skilled or whatever, you could come and do it.
Correct.
Yeah.
You just have to have some basic skills.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And then your own gear and that kind of stuff
too?
You do.
You need your own gear.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's happening. And then you also, of course, have open skates where everyone can get out on the ice.
Yeah,
right?
So we'll squeeze in some public sessions. We have an open skate Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 12:30 to 1:30. And on Wednesday in the evening from 5:30 to 6:30. And now's a great time to come out before school starts. I'm not sure what the weather will be like next week, but, take an hour out of the sunshine or an hour out of the rain and come and get your skating legs back.
Yeah, it's always a great time to go for a skate, right? It's such a fun, if I don't skate that often, and every time I go skating, I feel like I'm listening to Charlie Brown Christmas again, and it just takes you back, and it's such a great physical activity. And it's really,
and just gliding across the ice.
It makes you feel more graceful than you really are.
Well, it does. It gives everybody a little bit of grace.
That's a good way of putting it. Exactly. And, of course, lots of other stuff happening throughout the year. You're even going to be back on Juno Afternoon next week, right, to talk about even more stuff and all that. So it's just starting to ramp up, right? Is it getting crazy?
Once people are in the building next week, it will. But we're really excited. We're excited about the season, and we have stick and pucks and pond hockeys also next week. So if you are a hockey player and want to come out and...
what's that? Tell me about that a little bit.
A stick and puck is just going out, shooting on the net or on the boards. There's no gameplay. You need full gear, but it's a little bit more relaxed. Whereas a pond hockey is... a game. It's just a pickup game.
Right.
No refs. Just you go out there and you pick your teams based on jersey color and even it out. And kind of do a round robin, and everyone just kind of gets out there.
Right. Yeah. Everyone figures out if when they need a blow is when they come out and
thing. Just kind of take turns. Right.
No coaching.
No coaching, unless there's a coach on the bench.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's always one of those.
there always is, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, great. So there it is, folks. Treadwell Ice Arena. Today it feels like summer, right? All of a sudden it feels like summer, but it's so fun to think about the ice arena opening back up, getting back out on the ice, getting your ice legs back underneath you, playing hockey again, picking up games in hockey. It's a blast, right? That's why we live in Alaska.
Getting
out on the ice.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So just a recap one more time for folks. What's happening with the skills camp?
Well, we've got Rocky Mountain Hockey School next week, Monday through Friday. Basically, 9 is the first group that starts in 10:15. It's all day. You'll have to bring your own lunch. Sign-ups are still available. You can come down on Monday morning to sign up with Rocky Mountain Hockey School out of Colorado. We'll have open skates squeezed in the afternoon from 12:30 to 1:30, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Lauren Anderson here from the Treadwell Ice Arena, which is opening up on Monday as they finish up pouring the ice right now. And skills camp coming up, and all kinds of fun stuff coming up as well. And you'll even be talking about it more even next week.
I will, yes. And then if you have more questions, you can call 586-0410 or Google Treadwell Arena or go to our website and find out more details.
The website's great because it's got all the schedule, all the hours, everything that's going on.
It does.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's great to check in on the website and see what's happening first. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you.
Get up!
Yeah, Jump. Jump Film Festival coming up. Lou Logan. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. Thanks for inviting me
and
in my deep nasal voice.
You're doing your are you doing your radio voice? Do the radio voice. Lou Logan's here from Alaska Robotics, Lucid Reverie, the guys who put on the Jump Film Festival twice a year.
That's right, Andy, twice a year.
That's
the
radio.
Jump Society Film Festival, a collection of locally produced short films.
And that's the end of the interview. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming by, Lou. So what's going on? Are people people still submit or that's
yes,
over?
Yes, we're still looking for video submissions. Try to get your video over to us by Monday, we say, but as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Film Fest is on
I
Thursday,
think
Friday,
this is,
Saturday.
This is crazy to me always. You take film submissions up to Monday, and actually sometimes even people are late on that.
Yeah.
And then you turn it around and you have a film festival by Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It's all edited and you have the programs all done and all that stuff and you've put it onto these DVDs. You're still using the HD DVDs?
We use a Blu-ray.
Blu-ray, yeah.
What we do is we get all the movies and we lock Aaron in a room and by 4 a.m. the next day, they're ready.
Yes. You slide pizzas under the door every 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's pretty much just it happens. Yeah, he does a lot of that work, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about this amazing poster you have this time around.
Oh,
what's going on with that?
It's you'll see them around town, hopefully. They're yellow with all text.
It's not the most graphically challenge. I don't know what happened.
Died.
You just went low tech.
Yeah.
You were like, I'm gonna go. Yeah.
Kids these days, they can't pay attention to posters, so I have to keep it under 120 characters.
Is that right? It's textable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a textable schedule. Well, so tell folks about the schedule that's coming up here.
Thursday,
yep.
Friday, Saturday at Gold Town Nickelodeon. 7 o'clock on Thursday. Friday, we have two shows as usual, 7 and 9. Same with Saturday. And you can get tickets at Alaska Robotics, and that is the gallery and comic book store between the movie theater and the Viking.
Yep.
And tickets are free. And people ask, why do you give tickets out even though they're free? But back in the day, we did free-for-alls, and people would all come to one, and there would be no seats.
Right, and then they'd get mad.
Yeah.
And they'd leave, and they wouldn't come back for the other one. They'd blame you. Always blamed. Always blamed.
Yeah. Back in the day, you didn't have tickets.
And then
you used rhubarb stalks, and we didn't even have seats back then. They weren't invented yet.
So, and then the other question I've heard people ask is, why don't you charge money? Because it's such a fun thing that people would pay money for.
It's kind of complicated with the copyright and legal junk. People use copyrighted music and...
That's what I've heard. I've heard you and Pat have explained that to me before, and I was like,
"Pat knows more about it than I do."
I know. I mean, it's true, right? You're not supposed to just go use Van Halen Jump on a video about Jump and then show it to people for money, right? You're not supposed to do that because you're supposed to
Something
license
like that.
It, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I always thought that was really cool that you guys really played that by the letter of the law. Like that was awesome, and it also allows any filmmaker, even like an amateur filmmaker, to do kind of anything they want. Because it's not done for commercial purposes, and therefore you don't have to worry about licensing.
But now that we finally, after 12, 13 years, got together and got the nonprofit status.
Oh, you do have that now?
I think we just shipped the paperwork out.
Okay.
Jamie Karnick was kind enough to finish that up.
He's not a kind person, typically.
Blew the dust off that. So we should be... We're thinking of having some events like a movie night where we just play whatever, or
fundraiser for the
fundraiser.
Nonprofit.
Yeah. We could bring in beer for the late shows next time. So there's some ideas swirling around.
That's fun. That's going to be fun. I'll help you with the beer.
I know.
I will.
Both the providing and the drinking.
Yes, I'll get it. I'll be there on both ends. So have you seen any of the stuff submitted yet?
I have not, but at I just saw Patty.
Yeah, she's
Kyle Brenner.
She's here working at K2 now. I know, it's so exciting to have her here.
So she said she'll have some stuff in.
Oh, very good.
I talked to Corin Hughes-Scandies at the
he's gonna have something
Haines
right?
State Fair, and he should have something too.
Always funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does with Brady sometimes in there.
Yeah,
and that stuff's always amazingly funny.
And Alicia and
Kirsha. Last one was great. What was the last one? The by Juno by Sell. What is it? Juno for what was it?
Juno by Sell.
Juno by Sell. Juno by Sell. So that was amazing. It's always great. Like I always think that the film festival is so fun because there's always these real highly produced, well done kind of gems from people who've been doing filmmaking for a while. And then there's always these really raw ones that can be really creative and amazing and interesting and goofy and all that stuff. And sometimes those are the funnest ones, you know, the ones that are just these little short things.
Yeah, you don't have to be a pro to submit a movie to us as long as it's under 10 minutes and not terribly stupid in a bad way. It could be stupid in a good way, and that's often...
Those are the best
great
ones. Yeah, right.
For guys like us.
Yes. We can understand that. Yeah. Yeah, but every now and then you'll maybe, especially if they can submit it a little early. I know a lot of the filmmakers really work with you guys during the process, right? They'll kind of like, in the past, they've sort of, you know, you've given them advice about things and kind of worked with them a little bit about how to trim stuff down or what part can be worked out.
Yeah, once in a while, if they need help and they can stop by. Either the gallery or Lucid Reverie, and we can show them a thing or two. But most of the time we just say shorter is better.
Well, that's sort of true, isn't it? Isn't that always true? That mm-hmm. just if you can tighten it up, it's always going to be better. Always going to be better. But don't take out funny, though.
No.
Never take out funny. So are you guys going to submit anything for it? You guys got anything in the works, or... Maybe some of the Alaska Robotics News stuff? Or
we'll probably throw some of that in, but it depends on how many submissions we get and how much filler we need to throw in.
And, typically the thing maybe lasts for, it's usually like not quite an hour, something like that usually?
It can last anywhere from an hour to hour and a half usually.
Yeah, okay.
Usually around an hour and a half.
Right. And you divide it up, you got an intermission in there. It's a really mm-hmm. fun thing to go to. And but like Lou was saying, like I've seen, you know, spread it out over a few, you know, if you don't have to go Friday or Saturday, or you know, think about going at other times or one of the earlier shows off. Usually some of those are the earlier ones are usually easier to get into. Maybe is that true? Or
well, it seems to vary every year.
Yeah,
I think Friday at 9 is going to be the big one this year, but then it might be Friday at 7.
Yeah. But anyway, it's all worked out because you just get tickets ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Alaska Robotics at the comic book store there over by the movie theater and the Viking.
Mm-hmm.
As you leave the Viking, go by. And then attend. All happening next weekend, starting Thursday, one show at 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then two shows Friday and Saturday, 7 and 9.
At the Gold Town Nickelodeon.
Are you doing any other matinees or out in the valley or anything later? Or
like
you've done that out at UIS before?
Year.
Not this year? Yeah.
Not that I know of.
Yeah. People can come in. It's not that hard of a ride.
Yeah.
It's
12
summer.
Miles.
Yeah, 12 miles. It's a good walk.
Come on. Come on.
In my day. All right, Lou, thanks so much. Anything else to add about Jump Film Festival? Just get your submissions in, I guess, right?
Yeah. Give us a call at 586-3440 if you have any questions.
Are there any formats or things like that that people need to kind of stay away from or that it's more important to do, like don't hold your iPhone upright, stuff
that's
like that?
That's the one right there.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can handle the rest. But if you have a vertical video like Andy tends to do, you will be...
Sorry.
Severely chastised.
They'll letterbox it, so it'll be even smaller. It'll be tiny. All right, Jump Film Festival coming up. Lou Logan from Alaska Robotics, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Andy.
Talking. Guess what's coming up next? You love this. Bird Note. You love Bird Note. You have to hear the bird singing?
Caw-caw!
Let's hear it. Do a Bird Note for us real quick, and then we'll go into it.
Caw-caw!
Maybe a raven? You're not going to do it. He's out.
It takes practice.
Here's the real Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. At the close of a summer day, the songbirds go silent. Aviri's final notes reverberate in near darkness. And, as if on cue, the true birds of the night now make their voices known. In an eastern woodland, the eerie trills and whinnies of an eastern screech owl are among the first sounds of the night. An eastern screech owl is petite, standing just under 9 inches tall. Mates trill to one another during courtship, and whinny to defend territory. When night falls west of the Rockies, a different pair of small owls combine voices, hooting a rhythmic duet. These night singers, western screech owls, are found in low-elevation woodlands and deserts. But there's another bird whose voice will drown out the loudest of screech owls. These are the rhythmic hoots of a barred owl, a large, stocky bird of forests, swamps, and suburban parks. Pairs may break into a rollicking duet, sometimes called their monkey call. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
The do-it-yourself idea has a long history. In the case where something goes wrong and a repair service isn't nearby, well, you have to improvise.
And there goes the mizzenmast. Blimey! If she's not repaired, we're sunk! Arr!
Oh, B-52s are roaming. Sorry about that little bit of audio that was in there, cut in there. That's a technical difficulty. That's what they call that. Andy Klein here, your host. I'll take full credit for that technical difficulty. Sorry, blame is what it should be. But Margie Hamburger's here with me right now from the Juno Museum. And thanks so much for coming in, Margie, to talk about the Juno Explorers program.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Tell me all about it. This sounds like fun.
I hope it's going to be fun. I'm excited.
Okay.
So this is a week-long program, although on the side to say kids can just come for as many days as they want, if they only want one or several. But anyway, our every year we do these programs at spring break and in the summertime, and we try and learn stuff about our town and explore. And this year, the theme, or this season, the theme is newspapers. And I'm partnering with the Juno Empire, and I'm really excited about this.
Oh, okay.
So in a week's time, we're going to learn all about newspapers, we're going to form a staff, and we're going to produce our first edition.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I was on the school newspaper in high school, and then I was a radio reporter for years and all that stuff. So I love the idea of getting kids into all aspects of what it takes to produce a newspaper, you know, because it takes so many different tasks, and it's a really fun experiment for a group of people to do, because you can have all kinds of different talents and apply them in all kinds of different ways.
And we're going to be working with different people associated with the Empire, journalists and photojournalism and cartooning and stuff like that, and we're going to be looking at all the different kind of aspects of what can go into a newspaper, and then we will decide who we are and what we're called and what our titles are. That will be fun.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have a obituary writer or a vice columnist. I don't know.
Sure. Like the blotter. That's the first section everyone goes to.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then layout and design
exactly.
and all that, and then actually printing it. And Everything.
Yeah. Well, we're going to start off on Monday. We're going to go to the Empire and take a tour. And Abby Lowell has been working closely with me over there. And so she's kind of our point person. And she's going to show us how that what that all looks like and see everything from, you know, where the news gets written and also actually how it gets printed and stuff like that. So that's going to be fun on Monday. And then on Tuesday, we're going to focus on being journalists and what we might decide to write about and what we want, what stories we want to tell in our newspaper.
Being objective.
And
very important.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah,
well we could have editorials,
well,
right?
That's true. But they have to be called that.
Yes, that's
the
right.
Thing.
That's right. So we'll be kind of talking about that. And then on Wednesday, Toe is coming to do cartooning with us.
Very cool.
He's not producing right now, but he can share some of his wisdom and talk about what he has done with us. And then so we'll be drawing and doing cartooning. And then on Thursday, if I have this right, Michael Penn is going to come and we're going to see his photographs and talk about photojournalism, and then we'll go out and shoot pictures, hopefully to go with the stories that we've been writing. And then that's Thursday, right? And then Friday's kind of like
get it all together day.
And
yeah.
In between there, we'll be doing fun stuff as, again, depending on who the kids are and what their interests are. So maybe we'll conduct some interviews. Maybe we'll make a crossword puzzle.
Very cool stuff. Now, what made you kind of prompted you to think about this as the theme this year? Or first of all, like, what are some of the themes you've done in the past years?
Last summer, I think we focused on animals. So
okay.
We went to all kinds of different places to see animals, from sled dogs to, you know, dye pack, looking at fish.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had a really fun day splashing around the creek collecting aquatic insects. So we were exploring animals in our community. What did I do this spring? Why am I blanking on that? Oh, well, one time we had like arts and culture, so we were looking at different kind of institutions and individuals, artists and museums and different things.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, might be cultural.
Yeah,
in our
sure,
community. So
sure.
Just I like to get the kids out and meeting people, real people doing real stuff.
It's such an interesting thing because I think there's lots of programs that are great programs for kids in Juneau that's about the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And about getting out there and all that. But it's such a interesting thing and important thing to say, well, we're part of this town as well in this community, and then there's these ways of being informed or all these great jobs or all these great things that are happening in this community.
Right,
it might
right.
be cultural or along the or sciences or in this area of journalism and informing people.
Yep.
So it's really such a key thing for kids to know that there's that whole world too, and it can be really exciting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then the newspaper is, you know, you asked why that. You know, I'm at a history museum, General Douglas City Museum, and we're about, you know, telling the story
yeah.
of our town. And one of the ways that we know those stories is from the newspapers that have been published. And we've had newspapers in Juneau pretty much right from the get-go. When 1880, I think our first newspaper was just a couple of years after you know, Joe Juneau and Richard Harris show up and start looking at gold. So so our town is really well documented. And then when researchers and people want to know stuff that happened in the past, that's one of the places we turn is to the newspapers. So it's pretty interesting.
Can I spring on you some questions about newspapers in Juneau? Do you know the names and, like, when the Empire started and do you know that stuff offhand?
I don't have that offhand.
Yeah. It's such an interesting thing to think about, that's the way that news and news dissemination has happened in America for,
right.
you know, the past century or even more. And the idea that more than, you know, 150 years ago or so, Juneau was getting informed by newspapers and, you know, there was all that stuff and that news
right.
was really important for those people of that day.
Right. I think we even had two newspapers pretty rapidly.
Is that right? Douglas
yeah.
and Juneau or both?
I think they were both coming out of Juneau,
uh-huh.
but I'd have to
yeah.
go back and research a little bit to make sure I was telling the truth.
And then
that.
In journalism, of course, radio journalism, I mean, not to toot our own horn here too much, but lots of radio journalism has been so important in
right.
Alaska in general
right.
and then in Juneau as well, and there's been great you know, legendary radio personalities that have come through, you know, Vernon Metcalf and all these kind of great
right.
personalities that have lived here and worked here and informed people here, you know. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Newspapers, it's a funny thing, though. Is there a way that you have to talk to kids about newspapers different than how they probably maybe get their news, which is through the Internet now and through social media and stuff
really
like that?
That's really interesting. I'm interested when the kids show up. And just by the way, we still have space in the program, so kids can come.
I was going to ask that next.
Yeah, we'll
so,
have
yeah.
all those details in a minute. But I am curious to find out, like, how many kids get the newspaper in their homes, get it delivered, or see their parents or maybe themselves looking online to read it, or just how they get their news and,
yeah.
and what they're aware of. So I'm really curious about that. I know my own home, we are subscribers to the newspaper, and part of the reason that we are is for our kids. And 'cause it by having that print on the kitchen table in the morning, you know, even before they were strong readers or something, they would, you know, get interested in a photograph, or they'd say, "Mom, what's this? What's going on here?" Of course, they like to look at the, you know, comics
sure.
and that kind of stuff. But it kind of really started them being aware of that bigger world and starting to ask questions about it.
Yeah, it's such an informative piece of our world still. I mean, but it is different, isn't it? I mean, I can remember being so excited on Sunday because the funnies were in color, you know?
I mean,
it's like, boy, is that, I'm sure it's really probably different for kids now. Probably not as exciting. Well, tell us a little bit about how, if people are interested and want to get their kids involved in this, how they can sign them up.
Okay, well, the target age is kids ages 6 to 11, so basically the elementary school or maybe, you know, edging up into the middle school age range. And they can find us online if they want to go right to the Juno Douglas City Museum website. It's probably easiest to just Google that, but it's juno.org/museum. And underneath there's the museum classes, and they can get all the registration materials there. Or they can call us up at 586-3572, or they can stop by the museum on the corner of, 4th and Main. And it's all morning. It's 8:30 to 12:30, Monday through Friday next week. As I said, kids can pick and choose, or families can pick and choose if they don't want to come all 5 days, or you know they got other things
yeah.
going on. However, it does kind of build on itself. But we can slot a kid in for a couple of days here and there, or one day. So 8:30 to 12:30. The cost is $185 the whole week, or $37 per day. I got snack.
That's important.
And all the materials. I just bought these really cool reporters' notebooks, so special
nice.
Kinds. So
yeah.
I'm excited about writing stuff down in there. And so then we'll get started.
That'll be great. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. It's the Juno Explorers program that the Juno Museum puts on, and it's again for 7 to 11 year olds. It's all available online. Juno.org/museum is
mm-hmm.
the place to go. And, $37 a day, $185 sounds like a great little investment for a kid to get interested in how news happens in Juno and in America.
Yeah.
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 So well, thanks so much. Margie Hamburger coming by from the Juno Museum and Juno Explorers. That
thanks
sounds like
so
you got a great week ahead of you there.
Yep. I'm
okay.
looking forward
what
to
are
it.
The dates again?
So it's next week,
next
August
week.
10th through 14th.
Okay,
and that's
great.
That last full week, you know, before school starts. So if you know, people are going stir crazy and going, oh, I can't wait for them to go back to school. Then send them to me because I'm excited to hang out with them.
That doesn't happen. Does that happen? I guess it does happen a little bit. All right, Margie, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And that's it for Juno Afternoon today. I want to thank all my guests, including Byron Birdsall and Courtney Birdsall. They're down at Annie Kale's. Pretty much right now, getting ready for their first Friday. It's happening down there. Also, Lauren Anderson from Treadwell Ice Arena opening up on Monday. Lou Logan from Alaska Robotics. Jump Society is happening next week. And get your submissions in by Monday. And that starts on Thursday next week. And Margie Hamburger, thanks again to Margie for talking to us about the Juno Explorers program. I'm Andy Klein, and that's Juno Afternoon for today. Have a great weekend.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus,